What's up and welcome to episode 57 of the Jake Talk Sports Podcast. I am here today with TikTok megastar Sir Yacht. How's it going, man?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to talking about whatever we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I was super pumped for this. I want to start with talking about your content. I wanted to ask you one question first before we continue. Are you a full-time content creator, like as a job?
Yeah, I am. I've been full-time since February of 2021. So this is all I do.
Sweet. So let's talk about that experience, because I've talked to a bunch of people who do the same thing, and I've heard like a lot of mixed messages about it. What has been your experience being a full-time content creator? What are the ups of it, the downs of it, and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, so just like a little background, I was in sales and marketing. I had like a business degree, and you know, I do a lot of sales right now, but it's like, you know, I believe in the product. The product is my content. The product's myself. And I didn't like sales and marketing because I just didn't like the product and stuff like that, whatever I was doing. But anyways, flash forward to February 2021, I get let go from my marketing job because of COVID. At that time, I was making some money off of promoting pounds on my TikTok and working with visitors bureaus in Ohio. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had a chance at, you know, making this a career. So I didn't apply for any jobs for the first time in my life. And I was like, all right, we're going to go full time on this thing and just see if we can kind of make it work. So for the next like 2-3 months, all I did was email towns, visitors bureaus, chambers of commerce, main streets for like 50 emails, like every night I would send, like schedule for the next morning. And it was crazy. So it was a bunch of work, but what it did is it helped me like get in touch with a bunch of people and set up some good town videos and things like that. So the positive of being a content creator is that, you know, you get to create your own path. You get to make videos for a living. Like, it's a very sought after career. It's really fun. You get to meet potentially anybody on the internet. Like, you can connect with anybody. You never know the power of social media. I guess the parts that are tough is that you have to really be okay with people just hating you because of content. Like, they don't necessarily know you personally at all. It's just because of the content you put out. And then also it's hard sometimes when you put out a video and you put a lot of work into it and it doesn't do well. Like, you have to just, unfortunately, just not rely on views and things like that and take it personally. So there's a bunch of pros, a bunch of cons, but like, I think it's just such a cool job that if you just simplify it as best you can, like it really is something that you can, you know, have a great time doing.
Is there any like fear in that, like knowing that if your content were for some reason just take this like massive dive and just go like your views would be super down and stuff wouldn't be working out, that content creation could be like end up just not working out as a full-time job for you? Or are you at a point where you're like confident and comfortable doing this and knowing that it'll work out?
No, I mean, I would be lying to you if I said that I was 100% comfortable. I think it's just human nature. I think on the flip side though, I've had, you know, ups and downs through my content career, but time and time again, like something good has happened and I've been back up and stuff like that. So it's everybody thinks it's always like, oh, I mean, eventually, like when you at a place like Logan Paul or whatever, you know, anything you put out does really, really well. But there's always going to be ups and downs of everything. But yeah, I mean, the biggest point of like being a content creator is like you want to have relevancy. You want things to do statistically well so that, you know, brands come in, you show them how your videos do, and then they want to work with you, they pay you, and then you can make more content, and then you could do more videos, more brand deals that go higher and higher and higher. And that's just how the model is. So there's definitely a fear around, you know, sustaining that. But I think if you like look at it that way, it's very tough to make it as a creator. Like, you can't do that for too long. You can't be fearful, creating fearfully. So you got to just kind of keep, like anything, you kind of just kind of suck it up and keep going and trust that, you know, eventually something will be good again.
Yeah, for sure, dude. What was your original inspiration to start creating content?
So the first thing I ever did, the first video I ever made was right after the Browns went 0-16. At that time I was working a sales job, and actually I wasn't even working a sales job. I had an internship for a sales job, and then I was looking for a job for 10 months. I was a valet at a country club, and I was just so in my head. Like, I was just like, nobody can hire me. I'm never gonna like just grow or like make money or anything like that. I just felt like the biggest bum on the earth. And I was making music, and the music wasn't doing great. I was just like, nothing's working, and this is so frustrating. So flash forward to the Browns going 0-16. My friend Tom Ramella tells me I should make a rant about the Browns. But nah, I don't really do that stuff. You know, I don't make videos. He's like, dude, you should do it. Anyways, he convinced me to do it on New Year's Eve 2017. For whatever reason, it went viral on Twitter. Because I pointed out like all the, like a bunch of spots on like here that Hugh Jackson should jump into. Because he said he would do that if the Browns went 1-15 again. Well, they went 0-16. So I did that, and it went viral on Twitter. And then the next morning I wake up on New Year's Day 2018, the first day of the year, I'm on SportsCenter Snapchat, and I'm like, holy cow, there's something here. So one thing I'm like good at, and I've been good at in my content career, is I strike an iron when it's hot. You know, if I have an opportunity, I'm not gonna let it go away, especially something like, I've always wanted to be an entertainer, but I didn't really know what. I was like, music is like my number one. So then I started making weekly videos. I didn't make another video for like 2 weeks because there's like this kid from like St. Ed's that got 16 likes on a quote to me or something like that. And he was just like, this dude's so cringe. Like, this is the worst video ever. Meanwhile, the video has like 8,000, 10,000 likes or whatever. And I let like a kid that had 16 likes on a tweet like completely ruin my like thing. So I was like, I verbally said out loud, I was like, I have to just ignore hate or appreciate it, because people are either wasting their time or spending their time hating. I was like, I can't focus on that. I can't care about what anybody thinks anymore. So did that, and started posting videos again weekly, and then just kind of just dove into what it is today.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's awesome. Obviously, that's kind of something that you're known for, is just ranting on Twitter and screaming. We're gonna bring up the Jets game later on the episode, but that video did make my day on Sunday.
A little PTSD
for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So talking about some of like your recent content, I want to talk about some of the challenge videos that you've been doing, and just talking about your experiences with them. Starting with the stranded on Lake Erie for 24 hours. I assume that on a level of like the challenge videos you've done previous to that and after that, where would you say that ranks on like as far as like the experience goes?
There's like different criteria for different rankings. So the thing that was the toughest thing that I've ever done so far out of these like four challenge videos we've posted, we have two like in the vault right now that we're working on that I'm super excited about, but the four that I like posted, the toughest one was when I biked the state of Ohio, because that was like 350 miles in 4.5 days without training. Like, I went to like a cycle store, and they like recommended that I don't do this. Like 100 miles, like I was like, maybe one day I can go 100 miles. Like 100 miles for like untrained person is like almost impossible. Like even going 80 miles a day is like near impossible. Well, I went 80 miles the first 2 days, and then like 70, and then I think 70 again, and then 50. I don't know if the math really adds up to that one, but it was such an amazing project. The strand on Lake Erie for 24 hours, I didn't think it would be as tough as it was.
Yeah.
I had my Twitter audience vote on the food and drink I would eat, and the top comment would like be whatever. That's the only thing I could eat. And yeah, it was Big League Chew and maple syrup, which isn't even a food or drink. Like it's gum and then a liquid. It's like not a drink. So I was like, this is so dumb, but I did. I mean, it was so bad. Eventually, I had to have like water at night, because I was just like, well, also during the video as well, we had a wheel that we spun, so like I had to eat a ghost pepper, I had to drink Lake Erie water a few times, and that was disgusting. So I was like, I actually need water, I need something. And then eventually, like, I landed on part of the wheel that was like Uber Eats. So my videographer come back and forth on either a kayak or a jet ski, and he brought me, I think he brought me Cane's for dinner, and it was like literally the best meal of my entire life. At like 10 p.m. I was starving. So that was pretty cool, that whole experience, just like being on the water. I like forgot a blanket and forgot like shoes. So I was freezing at night. It gets super cold on the lake if you're just like on the water. That like breeze of the lake. So I was just, I was dead, man. And woke up the next day. It was so funny. I woke up at 10 a.m. Like we were done at noon. We had two more hours. I had like, you know, my full pajamas on, and like all of a sudden it's like 85 degrees. I'm just sweating. I'm just sweating like a whore in church. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm dying right now. But it was, it's like these videos are like experiences like I want, like I'm super happy about, super happy I got done, but I'll never want to do again. Now, some of these videos that we're going to work on that are releasing are things I do want to do again, but that definitely was one thing I don't want to do again, but it was fun.
Have you had a lot of experiences with these challenge videos where people are just like, don't do this, you're like, you're going to like get seriously injured? Or is it, was it just like the biking the entire state one that it was actually like a little bit of risk?
Are you saying like, do I have a lot of experience with people saying not to do it?
Yeah,
so it's funny. Most of these things, like, so the first challenge video that I really did was, I went to 13 cities named Cleveland in 10 days. And, that was something I decided on 10 hours before I did it.
So
I mapped out this thing on MapQuest and, this route. And I was like, oh my God, you can do 13. Like there are 13 cities in the country named Cleveland. There's like 15 other townships, but I'm not going to North Dakota or Washington or something like that. Like I can do all the cities in like 10 days. I mean, that's crazy. So I put out a tweet, like 10,000 likes and I'll do this. And I got 10,000 likes in like 90 minutes. I thought I would get 10,000 likes in like a month. And I was like, holy cow, this is wild. So then I was like, all right, I'm thinking about when to do it. Like maybe in a month, maybe in a few months, I'll prep it. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going tomorrow. I have a 10-day window to do this. I'll just do this tomorrow. So I saw on that, and people didn't really have time to say I shouldn't do it, because by the time people found out about it, I was already doing it, including my like family. When I biked the state, I had a couple people say not to do it, because that's just like insane. The thing that most people say, sorry, my dogs are barking. That's the only dogs that are barking in Cleveland this past weekend. The ones that play on the football field did not bark.
No, they did not. No.
The thing that most people, no, they did not. The thing that most people like were really, really against was when I skied the Cleveland Marathon.
I was going to ask about that one.
Literally every person that I knew, besides my videographer, who was even questioning it, said not to do it. Like I will get plantar fasciitis. I will. Like my Achilles, I'll tendonitis, I like won't be able to walk. Like it's just like would permanently damage my feet. And like, I don't know why whenever somebody would say that, I was just like, it made me want to do it more. I'm like, I'm in, like, I'm just, so we bought like cross country skis and boots, and I can only do 9 miles of the 26 because they accelerated me. They made me do the half marathon because I was like going so slow. Like in marathons, when you're in last place, they have this person called a sweeper to make sure the last place person, like, you know, goes at a certain pace. And then they like, feed them. So like I was getting like sweet rolls and like all these other things, like just a bunch of Gatorade. And I was like, oh my God, last place is so fun. So I'm just going so slow. They can't close off all the roads and stuff like that. So they literally were just like, all right, we're going to drive you 4 miles up. So I got in this like nice Suburban. Or like whatever the car was, and they drove me 4 miles up because so they could like open the roads again, because I was just like blocking everything, apparently, like clunk along on my skis. And I don't, for people that don't know, I'm sure everybody knows, but the people that are trying to imagine this, yes, I'm walking on skis on concrete, which is like clunk clunk clunk, like there's no grace, there's just no beauty about that. There's nothing fun about it. But like I was going along, I was like not too sore yet. After 9 miles, I was a little sore. So anyways, they drive me up 4 miles, and then, you know, I finished the half marathon, even though I only did 9 and 13. So I was like, okay, I have to do 17 more miles today. So we went to the bike trail, And like in Ohio, like by Cuyahoga Valley National Park, we did the remaining 17. And
nice.
Yeah, it was just, it was insane. It was insane. So that was one video that like people were just like, yeah, you shouldn't do this. And I was like, okay, cool. I heard do this. That's all I heard. yeah, but like I think every other video, like some video ideas that I have, like a little safer. Like we run it out. The Ohio State Reformatory, where Shawshank Redemption was filmed. Mm-hmm. It's like dubbed like the world's most haunted prison. So we did hide and seek there. Where, like I was seeking 12 people, two teams of six. Mm-hmm. Winning team, like AKA the team that had the most people that were not found, advanced to the final round. And then that winning team, won, like they had the opportunity to find me. I was the one hiding in the final round. And whichever this the final six found me first would win like $1,000. So it turned out to be a super, super good video we're editing right now. But like that's something that people were like, and not just like, oh, don't do this. They were like, oh my God, that's like the coolest thing ever. So it's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm. Last content related thing. What platform that you're on have you found it's the hardest to like grow and build a solid audience on?
Definitely YouTube. Now it's getting easier with short form content being a thing with YouTube Shorts.
Mm-hmm.
The issue with that is you could get a bunch of subscribers on your shorts, but there's a disconnect between people viewing your shorts and viewing your long form videos, which is your long form is the most important because that's where you're going to get, you know, more connection, more community, AdSense. You know, you get, if you know, with a good video that gets a million views on a short, you're literally getting pennies on the dollar. Like you're literally making like maybe $1 or $2. Now you get these things called shorts bonuses every month, which might be like a couple $100, something like that. But if you get a million views on like a long form video, you're talking like $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, what, depending on your CPM, it's whatever. So it's just, I think YouTube is working on how can we get people to watch shorts for a creator to also watch their long form. It's something they're like working on, I'm sure. But I think as creators, you know, I need to do a better job of being like, hey, if you want to see the full video, check this out on my long form page or something like that. So it's definitely the toughest. It's been growing recently. My YouTube's been growing recently because of YouTube Shorts. Like I think almost like 33,000 subs on YouTube, which is like not bad. Just most of them are from shorts, which is fine. And like I used to make rant, like I used to post all my rant videos on there. Now I have like a reaction channel that I post them on. So it's like all these people follow me for either shorts or like sports or rants or something like that. So it's like, I'm just trying to get people to follow me for like my challenge stuff. So now we're doing like challenge stuff that we're going to post on YouTube Shorts and we'll see. But yeah, I mean, YouTube's definitely the toughest, but like, even though it's the toughest, it's like the most rewarding because it has the most, obviously, like they have a great profit share model with YouTubers. It's like basically a 50-50 split. And it's a great way to create a community. And because it's so hard, it's something that is the most rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I found YouTube for me also has just been the hardest to try and even reach an audience on. So definitely agree with that. So yeah, moving off of content stuff, you obviously, everybody knows you are from Cleveland. And you obviously, that's how you got started. Like you said, like making videos about Cleveland towns and about the Browns and stuff. So I have to ask you this question because I've only been to Cleveland once and it was not the best experience. What makes Cleveland a great city?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think first, just like people, for whatever reason, people that are from here, I mean, from the state, but like, I would say especially Cleveland, like are super, super proud of being from here. It's always like been like the butt of like every national media joke, the river caught on fire 50 years ago. Like all this stuff, sports teams are cursed. You know, they always would say that. And it was just always like this Cleveland versus the world mentality. But like, and there's like, oh, you leave Cleveland to go seek opportunity, which is starting to not become true anymore. But I think it's super evident when, you know, the Cavs got down with Mitchell. And during his press conference, when he was wherever he was in the world, he was like, I had no idea there were so many Cleveland fans, like Clevelanders around the world. Like, he got traded, then would come up to people, he's like, dude, I'm a Cavs fan. Like, I'm from Cleveland. I was raised there. Like, we're super happy to have you in the city. And these are people that, you know, are not living in Cleveland. They're living everywhere else. So I think it's the people and, like, the representation that makes it so great. Like, people are super, super proud of their teams, their city, and just they want Cleveland to be painted in a great light. Even, you know, recording artists, people that come back, Machine Gun Kelly, Kid Cudi, you know, people that are from here. I think what's so cool about it too is that, you know, there are five great lakes in the world, and we are the biggest one that is on, you know, Lake Erie. And you know, people always, you know, give Lake Erie crap. They can say it's, you know, a little polluted and stuff. It's fine. But it's just something about beyond the water and, like, the weather and stuff like that. It's just so cool. And it's like, it's a big city that is next to, like, literally so many other cities. Like, if you want to go to Chicago for a weekend, Nashville, New York, Columbus, well, you know, all these cities you can go. Niagara Falls is 3.5 hours away. Cedar Point's 1 hour away. Pro Football Hall of Fame 1 hour away. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is right there. Like, it's something that is so, it's like in the heart of the Midwest. And then there's also so many things to do there. The food and beer scene is very, very good, as are a lot of places in the Midwest. But it's something like where you can just, you got that big city feel, but you don't really have the traffic that you get in Chicago, LA, New York. You know, you don't, there's no traffic. And you know, it's much cheaper comparatively to those places, but you also get that city feel. And there's so many events and things that happen in the city. So it's just, I don't know. I feel like when you're born here, like, you love it. And then I really, like, I know people hate the city. Like, if they hate the city because they've never been here. You know, most people that come through the city have a great time. And I think people that see that, like, people like, oh, I'm from out of town, they, like, take it upon their shoulders to show them, like, hey, Cleveland is actually a great town. Like, we want to show you, like, all the cool stuff. Now, every city has their problems. Chicago with the south side, Cleveland with the east side, it could go on. But, you know, or it's not problems, I guess, but just, like, dangerous areas, whatever you'd like to call it. But Cleveland really is a great city. And it's a city that I'm very proud to be from.
Yeah. That's awesome. I lived in Chicago for a while for school, and I, like I said, I went to Cleveland once for, like, a band trip to go to the Rock Hall, but I guess I didn't really get the full experience there. So talking about the impact that sports have on Cleveland and stuff, like, I want to bring up the specific instance of when the Baker-led Browns made the playoffs with that win over the Steelers. How invested is this city in sports as a whole? Is it a pretty big, like, if something good happens, the city just goes nuts?
Yeah, I mean, especially, like, it's so funny. This city is such a Browns town. Now, when the Cavs came back in 3-1 and beat the Warriors in 2016 and win, you know, the first Cleveland championship in 52 years, that was nuts. I was downtown for that, and the streets were just flooded with people. You were hugging strangers, crying, just, like, in strangers' arms. Like, it was nuts. Now, having said all of that, I mean, there's, like, 1.2 whatever million people downtown. Like, Cleveland, like, isn't, like, 1.2 million is four times the city population. Like, that's, it was just crazy. So I knew a lot of people that came back in just for the parade, just to watch the NBA finals, even just, like, watch on TV at a bar in Cleveland, just to experience it in Cleveland. Now, having, and it was crazy because, 3 months later, you know, you have the now Guardians, former Indians, that are in the World Series. And it's the most Cleveland thing ever that they blow a 3-1 lead. And it's like, all right, well, we talked all this shit, you know, maybe we deserve that. But having said all that, like, all the momentum with that, it was so cool. Just the amount of support both teams got, and how the whole town was just excited. It really does rally around the teams. Now, having said all that, this town is a Browns town. Like, the fandom level for the Browns, I would say, is more than any other sports team in the NFL. I would say the Bills are definitely up there. I would say the Cubs are definitely up there, but there's just something about the Browns. We've supported them 1-15, 0-16 through plays, like games like last week or 2 days ago. Like, it's just, for whatever reason, I don't know why. I think maybe, I mean, they, even before the team came back after they got moved to the Ravens, you know, it was a Browns town, especially when they got the team back. Like, it just, it, I don't know why, but this town is just a football town. And if the Browns win a Super Bowl, the joke in this town is always like, the town's going to burn. Now, I hope the city doesn't actually burn. I will not be participating in that. Having said that, it's going to, like, people are just going to go crazy if the Browns ever were to win a Super Bowl. It just would be, I couldn't even explain it. Like, whatever happened with the Cavs, and if the Guardians ever win, like, is just nothing in comparison to the Cleveland Browns winning a Super Bowl one day. That doesn't even sound like a real sentence. It sounds illegal to say the Cleveland Browns winning a Super Bowl. But yeah, it sounds like I should be arrested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my next question was going to be, is Cleveland a football town, baseball town, or basketball town? But you definitely answered that. Yeah. 100%
football.
Moving into talking about the Browns. So, obviously, last week, they beat the Panthers, and I didn't see a video that you made after that talking about the game, but the video I did see was the one you made after the Browns and Jets game this week. All jokes aside, what is going on with the Browns? Obviously, it's Jacoby Brissett, but, like, you can't blame it on Nick Chubb, right?
Yeah, you know what's so crazy is you bring up the Nick Chubb thing, there's, like, an alarming amount of people that are blaming the guy that scored 3 touchdowns and was like basically the sole reason why the Browns were just gonna win that game. They should have won that game. And then, like, people are saying he should have gone out of bounds. Well, if you look at the replay, like, first off, to even try to blame him is you're a lunatic. You're insane. Now, if we were to blame him, okay, well, he should have gone out of bounds. The first yard marker was at the 1.5 yard line. And then you're telling me, like, he, like, ran the corner and, like, people are saying, like, he should have gone out of bounds, which is stupid because the clock stops and that doesn't help.
Right.
So then you say, okay, he has to stay in bounds. Okay, like, if he stays in bounds, there's a great chance he injures himself because he's just going to dive and at the 1 yard line and get hit by somebody that's going to, like, spear him.
Yeah.
And then he's going to, like, contort his body. There's so many, like, what ifs and stuff like that. Also, if he, you know, does that, the Browns kick a field goal. They're up 10, assuming Cade makes the field goal because he missed the PAT. And then they still had a chance to come back. This defense wasn't going to stop them. And then they didn't get the onside kick. Like, obviously, if they get the onside kick, you know, they win. Mm-hmm. They didn't get that. They didn't get the extra point. They love a 66 yard bomb. They love another TD after the onside kick. And some people are saying, well, Nick Chubb should have stayed out of bounds. And Kevin Stefanski's like, this is what bothers me about Stefanski. Like, he's trying to take accountability for this thing by saying, like, this is my fault. But he's doing it the wrong fucking way. He's the head coach, and the defense absolutely shit the bed. Now, saying, I should have told Jacoby or Nick Chubb to not, like, I should have told Nick Chubb to, like, stay in bounds and not score. That, it's just, I get what he's trying to do. He's trying to be accountable. But that's a freaking bad look. That's very bad. Like,
it is.
Like, we're blaming the guy that had 18 points, that scored 18 points. And for, like, the only reason people are doing this, by the way, is because last season against the Texans, Nick Chubb had, like, a 70-yard touchdown, and he stepped out of bounds at the 1 yard line. The Browns kneel it 3 times, and the game is over. Now, so many people were pissed at him because of bets and fantasy football and, like, the spread and stuff like that. He absolutely killed it. And it's just, like, these are probably the same people that are getting mad at him because he decided to score. So I don't care what anybody says. If you're up 2 touchdowns with 90 seconds left, that's not on Nick Chubb. The defense let up a 66-yard touchdown, let up another touchdown, and the special teams let up an onside kick, and special teams miss an extra point. That game is not Nick Chubb, and I'm sorry if you're saying that it's on Nick Chubb. Pardon my French. You're a fucking moron. You're an idiot. You're an idiot, and you should be arrested and possibly drug tested as well.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, man, is you go into the mentality where you score that touchdown, and then you just trust your defense to stop Joe Flacco from
running
the ball down the field.
It's not even Mahomes. It's Joe freaking Flacco 5 years out of his prime. And even literally everybody, CBS airs the 2-0 graphic for the first time since 1993, and here's Bill Belichick coaching, and then everybody's tweeting about all stuff. The game was wrapped. It was wrapped in a beautiful gift wrap. It was literally given to us. All they had to do, it's like they could have let up a touchdown. They couldn't even have done the onside kick. It was just like, get one stop. That's it. And they couldn't do it. Or just make it. I mean, here's the thing. If Cade York, I'm not even going to put on him. Because if he makes the extra point, that game's still going overtime. Yeah. And I'm not trusting that Browns defense to stop anybody in that overtime. So I don't think it's on him either. I think it's just on the defense. They sucked all freaking game. They let Joe Flacco throw all over them for four touchdowns, like 350 yards. 37-year-old Joe Flacco. Disgusting.
Are you blaming this defensive collapse more on the defense and their like talent levels or like the play calling by Joe Woods?
Great question. I mean, it's the coordinator can only do so much because the player is the one that's, you know, actually executing the plays.
Well, sure, yeah.
But at the same time, if I think it's a total schematic issue, you have guys like Grant Delpit saying like that wasn't my assignment at the end. Denzel Ward is like that wasn't my assignment. It's like, okay, it has to be one of your assignments because one of you guys let up a 66-yard touchdown. And I think like that's potentially a scheme issue. But this is like the third year where the Browns have so much talent in defense. You have Myles Garrett, who has a very good chance of being the defensive player of the year. You have Jadeveon Clowney. You got Denzel Ward. You got John Johnson. You have Grant Delpit. You have all these guys. And just like Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, like so much talent on that defense. And yet 31 points to the New York Jets. Now, granted, 14 of those points from the final 90 seconds, but at the end of the day, the scoreboard says 31.
You know, right.
You know, you lost because of that. So I think a lot of it is on Joe Woods because we've had 3 years of him or whatever it was. Yeah, I think three seasons and you know, nothing to really show for it. You know, and it's funny, a lot of people worried about the offense without Deshaun being in. And Jacoby Brissett looked great. He looked fantastic. Amari Cooper looked amazing. Nick Chubb, obviously. Nick Chubb, even though he lost the Browns the game, no, I'm just kidding, but he looked actually, you know, he looked fantastic as well. And it's just, it's so frustrating because there's so much talent on that defense. So you have to look at that as a coaching issue. And I think you've had a three-year resume of Joe Woods being incompetent. And I were the Browns, me personally, I would let him go yesterday. I would let him go a year ago, but they're taking the heat for him and blaming on Nick Chubb. So good job, Browns.
Can you see any situation that would have to happen this year for Stefanski to get fired at the end of the year?
Dude, isn't that crazy? Like, I think 2020 was a great season. They were gifted Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And, like, Baker, you know, obviously had a great year as well, especially in the second half. It was an okay first half, but a great second half. I don't know what happened. I don't know. It's weird because, you know, I think they bought some time last year because they could blame, you know, a lot of the dysfunction on, like, the Baker and Odell stuff. Well, it turns out, like, that shit ultimately didn't affect everything as much as it, you know, we thought it did, because the Browns had one of the most incompetent losses in NFL history on Sunday. And, you know, I love Stefanski. I love the way he approaches the media. He doesn't give anybody any sound bites. He's just, he's, you know, a guy that I think the players really like as well. But he's not, it's the honeymoon phase. A lot of people say the honeymoon phase is over with the Kevin Stefanski and the Browns GM Andrew Berry. Like, they got a Super Bowl window here, and when they traded for Deshaun Watson, this is just facts. They're not the lovable underdog team that could be quote unquote America's team, you know, that people want to root for. You know, that this is a team that is the number, like, probably the most hated team in the NFL, especially when Deshaun Watson gets back. Like it or not, whatever you think, that's just the reality situation. Cleveland Reporter, I can't pronounce his last name, but his first name is Doug. His last name begins with an L. He had a great thing, basically, like, the Browns sold that all away, like, business now, winning championships now. So, like, when people like Myles Garrett and other people are saying, like, they shouldn't boo, it's like, that's bullshit. Like, that was the most disgusting, like, way to lose ever. And, like, the fans are doing all these things. They're going to the games. They're buying the jerseys. They're promoting you on Twitter. You know, they're the reason why you get to make millions and millions of dollars and play a game you love. Without fan support, the NFL would be nothing. So you lay a fat fucking egg in the final 2 minutes and expect people to clap for you when you're going back to the locker room.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. I love Myles Garrett, but that's I don't know about that one, Chief. Now, here's the thing. Kevin Stefanski, I don't know if there's a situation where he gets fired this year because you could just say, oh, Deshaun wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Now, and then if you hire have a new coach when Deshaun is back, theoretically, in 2023, you know, that I don't know how – it would just be another telltale sign that the Browns are dysfunctional. I don't know if Jimmy Haslam would want to do that again. Jimmy, I mean, but it trickles from the top. I think Jimmy Haslam, like, is not a great owner. I'm firmly okay with saying that, even if the Browns, you know, do well this year and win a Super Bowl. I'm not that big of a fan of him. I think everything trickles down from the top in that organization. So there definitely is a situation where Kevin Stefanski could get fired this season. I don't anticipate it.
Yeah.
I think the Browns will bounce back. Now, who's to say they beat the Steelers? I don't know. They have a great shot because the Steelers aren't that great. They just lost to the Patriots. The Patriots aren't that good. But, I mean, I don't know if the Browns are that good. I don't know. Like, the offense looks great, but it's like, there's three teams that have to do well. And the defense special teams stink. They're not good. They're really not good.
Mm. Yeah, how do you, last, like, specifically Browns-related question, how do you feel about the future of the Browns in general? Obviously, there's QB controversy. That's going to continue until he's done in Cleveland. That's not going to stop. But how do you feel about the way this team is moving, the direction this team is moving? Because when he does come back and when Deshaun plays like a full season, they should be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because we've never experienced something like this in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Like, to the magnitude of the allegations and the accusations against Deshaun and, like, the proof and all that stuff. So, especially for a player that's, like, currently playing. Or like currently an NFL player, somebody that at when he gets back, like, will not have played since the 2020 season, like, in a starting quarterback job, like, over, like, almost basically two seasons. They chose a winning mindset over, you know, feelings or anything else. So the future is going to be really crazy. I've told people this, like, in terms of, like, the experience, I think it's going to be the most hostile football experience ever. You're going to have Browns fans fighting with Browns fans that like Deshaun Watson or hate Deshaun Watson. You're going to have opposing fans that are just going to boo the living hell out of the Browns and their fans. And anytime you go to another stadium, and especially when he comes back, like, I don't know much about right now, but when he comes back and plays, especially in that Houston game, it's going to be insane.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely something I'm trying to tread right now. Like, I'm definitely rooting for the team now because it's easy to, because he's not out there. But when he comes back, it's like, do I clap less for him? Do I? I don't necessarily know what to do. I feel like my morals are too high to, you know, fully root for a guy who has all these accusations against him. It's just so hard because you come to sports to basically get away from life. It's an escape from reality, escape to bliss. And when you insert real world problems into football with all these legalities, accusations, you know, whatever, it makes it really hard to enjoy the sport. So it's just been sure. Very exhausting. In terms of, like, the actual product on the field, I think the Browns, you know, they made the move because and trade away three first round picks because they, like, all right, every other piece is there. And last week showed that is not true. The offense looks great. When Watson theoretically comes in there, he's going to be rusty, but, you know, he's a top five, top 10 quarterback. They're going to be just fine. That defense just, I don't know. They're going to be fine. I think there's a chance they can make the playoffs this year. I'm going to lean more on the side that they don't. But in 2023, there's a real chance they're competing for a Super Bowl. We'll see what happens after that.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Moving off of the Browns and talking about some general NFL stuff, I'm going to do a little bit of a buy or sell segment. I'm going to name some teams for you that may be underperforming or maybe overperforming right now, and you're just going to tell me if you're buying or selling them as an actual playoff contender. Starting with the New York Football Giants.
Sell. I think they've had a weak schedule so far. They're not okay. So I'm happy for them. Brian Daboll is a great coach.
He is.
Like, you know, good for them. Whatever. Hope they continue to do well. I just am not very, very high on them. They just now Saquon Barkley's having a great year. You know, good for him. But they beat the Titans week one, who got smoked.
They're awful.
Last night by the Bills, 41-7. Now the Titans are very, very bad. Like Mike Vrabel might be a guy who's sneakily fired this year. Hmm. And then they beat the Panthers. You know, I love Baker, but he's struggling. Panthers have nothing around him. They suck. You have McCaffrey. But that's essentially it. Like that team is terrible. So they might do well. You know, there's a chance that they make a wild card spot. I think the Eagles are going to win the division. They're the clear cut favorite in that. They just look amazing. And the Giants play the Cowboys next, and the Bears. And the Packers and Ravens and Jaguars, Seahawks. Their schedule in Lions. I mean, there's a chance that they win a lot of games.
Sure.
But they're definitely not a contender.
I have to ask you this one because they are my favorite team, the Green Bay Packers.
Solely based on that they're in the NFC North.
Yeah,
I think sometimes it's literally gift wrapped to them, even if they're not amazing. But they typically, week one was a shocker. They lost, I think it was good for you, Minnesota. You finally you put together, that was your Super Bowl. You put together a great game against a team that always kicks your ass at home, did it well, good job. Now, the Bears, everybody was super high on because they beat the 49ers in a monsoon. Packers smack them 27-10.
Yeah.
I think that the Packers are going to be just fine. I think they're going to be a contender. Now, they just have to get over that hurdle of getting past the NFC Championship to a Super Bowl.
Sure.
But in terms of that question, they're definitely a contender. Anytime you have Aaron Rodgers on the field.
Yeah. Totally agree with that one. The Rams, last NFC team.
So I'm going to sell them. I would even sell. I was going to say another team, but you might ask about them, so I'm not gonna say it. But just coming back after the Super Bowl, they just have not looked good. I don't know. They're a different team. Matt Stafford definitely has. Problems with his shoulder or his elbow, excuse me. But they lost to who was the first game? They lost to the Bills. I mean, Bills, I think are going to win the Super Bowl. That's my opinion. They beat the Falcons by 4. The Falcons are not that great. They choked to the Saints. I was in Louisiana watching the game, so I have all these New Orleans Saints fans around me. They're up 26-10, classic Falcons fashion, classic Browns fashion also. they beat the Falcons, beat them. Or I'm sorry, the Falcons beat themselves, the Saints win. I don't know. I'm not sold on them. Cam Akers, I don't really know what's going on with him. Mm-hmm. That defense, a little questionable. And they're supposed to be, this great defense. They didn't do bad against the Falcons. I just think there's other teams in the NFC that are going to be much better, like the Buccaneers and Packers and even, teams in their division, like the 49ers with Garoppolo could be better. The Cardinals could have a chance. So I'm not sold on them.
Yeah, let's do one more NFC team because you just mentioned them and I think they're kind of interesting. The Arizona Cardinals, because they just came back and beat one of the teams that's supposed to be like a powerhouse in the AFC with the Raiders. And I just think it's mostly because of Kyler Murray, but what do you think of them?
That was a make or break game, I think, for the Cardinals. If they would have lost that game, people would have been like, this is just an ultimate collapse for this team. I think they have the talent to do so. They're going to get DeAndre Hopkins back. They're going to get J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones back. The issue is, and it's so funny, it's such a stupid reason, but it's true, Kyler Murray, I mean, you know all that stuff. Everybody's heard about, you know, when the new Call of Duty comes out, he does terrible. And whenever it's a double XP weekend, he does even worse.
Yeah.
And until, like, that's just one thing. It's like whenever, I'm so mad at myself for not putting money down, but I picked the Jaguars to beat the Colts because they, before this previous week, they won 7 straight games. And I was at the game last year in Jacksonville against the Colts when they knocked the Colts out of the playoffs. Because I was just happened to be in Florida. It was the clown game. All the fans dressed as clowns. So I dressed up as Batman and I was trying to find the Joker just for content. Anywho, there's things like that that I'm just like, until it's proven otherwise, I'm going to go with what the trending direction is. So anyways, I think they have the talent to do so, but for now I'm going to sell them.
Okay. Moving into the AFC, the Miami Dolphins.
It's a great question. The question is, do I buy or sell them as like a contender this year?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna buy them. I'll buy them. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll buy them. I think they have a good division to be in. Besides the Bills, I mean, they're not gonna win a division.
No.
The Bills are going to win that division pretty soundly. That would be, you know, God forbid anything happens to Josh Allen or whatever. I mean, assuming everything goes well. But there's no reason why they wouldn't. I mean, there's a chance the Bills go 17-0. There's a very I think they do something like 15-2, like something crazy. They're so sound, so good.
Yeah.
So the Dolphins are going to be good though. Mm-hmm. That comeback and that 28 points in the fourth quarter, Tua kind of came alive. But to be fair, you know, when you have
he didn't really have to do much. Yeah.
I mean, he threw 6 touchdowns.
Yeah.
At some point, you got to give credit to Tua. Obviously, he's not a Mahomes. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback. I would argue he might not even be top 15. But he's one of those guys that is going to do enough that he has to get it in a position, literally just in the area. Like, there's some throws he made to Waddle and Tyreek Hill. I'm like, those are interesting throws. But the guys are so talented.
Yeah.
You just give him the ball, and essentially, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I like Mike McDaniels a lot. I think he's such a funny coach. He had a quote the other day that was just like, you know, I hope we have adversity this game so we can face it and come back from it. And he said, I think my team took it too literally because they were down, 21-24 at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he's a great coach, though. I think they're building something very special there. And they got 2 top 10 wide receivers in the NFL right now. So yeah. I'm gonna buy them.
All right. We're going to do 2 more AFC teams. Moving into your rival, are you buying or selling the Cincinnati Bengals? How worried are you about that 0-2 start?
I'm very worried. I'm selling them. And we're recording our podcast, the Sir Yacht Show, a little bit after this.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a thing where, you know, we have a hot take each week. All 3 hosts, you know, have a hot take. My hot take is that the Bengals aren't good and Joe Burrow is not good. This is somebody that like loves Joe Burrow as like, you know, definitely like appreciate him here. But I think the Bengals incredibly capitalized on a depleted Browns team last season, a depleted Ravens team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a Steelers team that had a geriatric 300-pound quarterback as their starter that somehow, to be fair, somehow made the playoffs.
Right.
That's a miracle in itself. Not sure how that one happened. But then they had momentum, and to be fair, you know, they beat the Titans, they beat the Raiders, they beat the Titans, and then they beat the Chiefs, and then they went to the Super Bowl and like competed pretty well against the Rams and really almost could have won a Super Bowl. But I just don't think – I think they have a big Super Bowl hangover right now, and I just don't think they're the team that everybody saw come to life last season. So I'm going to sell them pretty hard.
All right. Then the last team, a team who is currently in first in their division, kind of surprisingly, the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're tough.
I'm going to buy them only because their division is terrible.
Yeah.
They are literally in first place right now. the Jacksonville Jaguars are in first place. Mm-hmm. Now their defense is going to be very, very special.
I like it a lot.
I'm definitely buying them next season. I mean, I'll do it this season. I think I'm really happy for Trevor Lawrence. He's looking great. Christian Kirk, everybody's like, why are we paying him $20 million? He had a great game last week. Mm-hmm. It's so funny because I drafted Travis Etienne in my fantasy league. Everybody thought he'd be like the running back one. All of a sudden, James Robinson's back at number one. He's killing it. Right. So I like them a lot. I think Trevor Lawrence is confident, especially when he doesn't have Urban Meyer as his coach. I think people are super hard on him. He's like, this dude is a generational talent. I think he's going to figure it out.
Yeah.
And solely just based on that division, like you're talking about a real chance they just have six like layup wins. There's a real possibility just
six
wins on the book. So we'll see. I'll buy them solely based on the AFC South being garbage.
Sounds good. Well, that is all I have to talk about. So if you want to go ahead and plug your socials, now would be the time to do that.
Yeah, so just everywhere I'm at basically is Sir Yacht, except Twitter. It's Sir Yacht with an underscore after it. But putting out, and I think the biggest thing is like we're going to start being more consistent with like the long form stuff on YouTube, like everything I make and brand deals on social media. Like for the most part, reinvesting back into making like big projects. And, you know, every morning I wake up and I say two words. I say Mount Rushmore. And essentially what that means is like, how can I be on the Mount Rushmore of content creators? So I got a lot of cool ideas that I'm super excited about that I can't necessarily reveal right now that I'm working on or is in the works. And, you know, we're gonna really take this thing to the next level. You know, we're gonna start to do it in 2022, but in 2023, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be the year. There's going to be a lot of things that happen because I'm just going to, you know, make them happen. I'm manifested. I'm going to execute on these big ideas that I've had for a long, long time. So you heard it here first.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day and recording this. This was a blast. So it was good to talk to you.
Yeah, dude, great talking to you, and I appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun.